There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile, hour number two on this Tuesday. Glad to have you along. And ways to get in touch with us? Yeah, there are plenty. Good old-fashioned phone call to 343-0106. That's also the phone number for the Ascension Technologies text line, 343-0106. And a reminder, if you're running the FM Talk 106.5 app, that main screen there where you're streaming us on the app, if you'll press that microphone icon on the front or the bottom of the page there, of your phone. If you hit that, you can record a message and it'll email it to us at the station. We can play it back right here. This segment of the show brought to you by my buddy Clint Jameson at Adventure Earth Bicycles. What a selection. 400 bicycles in stock. Okay, so the regular fully people-powered bicycles, 400 in stock. He's got mountain bikes, comfort and hybrid bikes, road and triathlon bikes, those beach cruisers, BMX bikes. In addition, though, what I fall in love with are the e-bikes. He's got 50 e-bikes in stock right now. Now, I'm riding the Scout from Magnum. That's the one you see the pictures of on social media, on our Facebook page or Instagram. That's the one that I use to ride around the whole time on the farm. It actually has not seen pavement yet, but I ride it on gravel roads and sand and dirt roads out there. It's got the big 4-inch tires on it, the off-road suspension. It's a really cool-looking bike, and it is a real treat to ride. And the thing about an e-bike is, every time I talk about this, I'll go to the text line, somebody's going to say, well, first of all, how fast it will go? So I'll do the frequently asked questions. If you pedal and use the full power of it, I think it'll do 28 miles an hour. I have never done 28 miles an hour in it. What I do is I keep it in a thing called eco mode. And what that does is it just kicks in when the pedaling gets really tough. And the benefit of that for me, because I'm trying to enjoy riding it and also get exercise on this bike. So if I'm in a real sandy road or going up a hillside or something like that, well, it kicks in just enough to keep the ride fun. Still getting exercise, still ride the bike a lot more than I would on a conventional bike. And it is a real treat to ride. It's like something that I said before, it gets addictive. They're so much fun to ride. Regular bicycles are, but the e-bikes have got me at 50 years old back into bicycling, and it'll do the same thing for you. They have 7 different manufacturers of e-bikes in stock: Magnum, Denago, Bulls e-bikes, Velotric, and Day 6 Comfort e-bikes. They also have demo e-bikes, bikes and e-bikes at Adventure Earth Bicycles. And that's what I did. I took a test ride, saw which e-bike was right for me. You can do the same thing at Adventure Earth Bicycles. They're at the corner of Airport and Little Flower in Midtown, kind of across from Ruth's Chris. You can go online, adventure-earth.com, or if you just Google Adventure Earth Bicycles Mobile, you'll get the website and can check out the inventory. And best yet, though, go see all those bicycles, 400 bicycles and 50 e-bikes in stock at Adventure Earth Bicycles, and tell my buddy Clint, he said hello. I've been knowing him for way too long that we don't want to admit how long we've known each other. All right, mentioned here at the end of last hour, we'd be joined by the executive director of the Mobile Airport Authority, our friend Chris Curry, joining us now. Good to talk to you. Hey, Chris, are you there?
Good to talk to you as well.
There he is. Yeah, good to talk to you. So I want a lot to talk about. You and I have not gotten to talk since the announcement of Avelo. Am I saying that right? Avelo Airlines coming in?
Avelo.
Okay. See, I have to put, remember we learned, what was it, the schwa when we were kids on how to, Avelo. Okay. Exciting because every time you're in here, I ask you about low-cost carriers. And you're like, Sean, okay, I got stuff coming. So obviously it has arrived. Talk about this.
Well, we're happy to have Avelo, and again, for the pronunciation, hello, Avelo.
Okay.
So they're flying directly from the Mobile International Airport to Orlando. twice weekly on what I think is a great schedule. They leave Thursday evening around 8 p.m., and they arrive in Orlando on Sunday, and then they depart Orlando Sunday at 6:30 and arrive back at the Mobile International Airport.
It is a it's the quick trip to Disney for folks. Get them there fast.
It's a quick trip to Disney for some. It's shopping for some, and also golfing for people like myself.
Oh, that's right. People. That's what. Okay, that's what other folks get to do when the rest of us are dragging around Disney. Keep showing off, Chris. I saw the fair that was when y'all had this announcement. It was it said introductory one-way fare as low as $29. How long does that last?
Well, that will last until March 17th. And what I'm told is that once everything levels out, the fares will average generally between $60 and $70 each way.
Well, it's obviously for families paying attention or like somebody just wants to go play golf. That is of interest. Is there a reason that Avelo is focused on one destination? Do they do this elsewhere, or is that just this route here? Are they like a bring people to Orlando, or what goes into that?
Well, Orlando is one of their bases, and for some cities, you know, they announce two different cities. But for us, I think it was important that we started slow. We selected a market and one that I think was a no-brainer and the community would respond very well. And once we establish that as a base for us, then I think we can start to talk about expansion to other cities. But Orlando has long been one of the most requested destinations for customers of our region.
Yeah, you've given me the list before, right, of the ones Orlando on there. Wasn't Chicago one of them too? What are like our top, where do people here want to go?
Well, Chicago ranks very high. Also Washington, D.C., Baltimore, New York, Las Vegas, Los Angeles Basin, Nashville, Denver. Those are some that rank very high. And also Fort Lauderdale, Miami area.
A bunch of people, Chris, asking me what the hardware here is. What kind of airplane are they flying to Orlando?
Well, good question. They fly a 737-800, which has a seating capacity of somewhere around 185 people.
Okay, so and that is so you if you're going to go, you're going to book, you're going to leave on Thursday from here and come back on Sunday.
That's correct.
Now, of course, then I see this is my next question. When I hear this, and this is a great announcement for folks here, does one carrier like this bring others? You know, I mean, we've seen it before with certain low-cost carriers coming in and them almost being a standalone. Do you think, you know, I'm always pushing, are there any other announcements? Does if Avelo comes in here and is doing well, do you think other low-cost carriers look at that and think about coming into the market?
Absolutely. I think one carrier success will breed more success. And if Velo is successful at the destination of Orlando, then it will also allow for the expansion to many of the cities that they serve.
But for them as an individual, do you think that one low-cost carrier, let's say they do that and they start flying multiple, does that, have you seen elsewhere? Is that incentivized other low-cost carriers to come in, or does kind of one set up shop and then they're the one?
You know, it depends on the size of their operation. For example, you've seen places where Allegiant goes in and then they establish many, many other locations out of that market. When they do that, they're less likely perhaps to attract other carriers. And they may operate at an airport with multiple destinations. But the way that Avelo is set up as a fairly new carrier, trying not to spread themselves too thin, there's only certain markets that they will be able to accommodate for us. So it does leave room for other carriers to come in and they not compete head-to-head with them.
Speaking of low-cost carriers, too, last time you were in with me, I think it was last time in, we got in a conversation of kind of the, really, y'all, this is real interesting, kind of the state of the union for low-cost carriers, that there was a thing happening where there were some, with these mergers talked about and all that, that there was an economy of scale to either stay at a certain level for low-cost carrier, say small, or combine, right, to be a bigger airline. Is that still going on? Has that shaken out?
Well, I think we're all waiting to see what happens with JetBlue and Spirit, because that's going to tell a lot about where the industry goes in the future, in my opinion. But I think that, you know, the days of the low-cost carrier is limited. There's not a lot of people that play in that space anymore, somewhat because of the mergers. And so I see this as a real opportunity for Mobile to take advantage of a low-cost carrier that's still in growth mode. Because, again, if we're successful with them, we grow with them, and we can be a market that has that presence for the future.
That's
I think this merger thing, if JetBlue and Spirit is allowed to merge,
right?
I think that there may be others that follow that path in the future.
I mean, this is real interesting, y'all, because, I mean, what you had laid out, Chris, I mean, you talked about this last time, that there's a it's not just individual companies making, they're making those decisions, but the market is driving some of this.
It is. It certainly is. And you know, with the pilot shortage, with the shortage of aircraft, you know, some of these mergers are simply to allow expansion because, you know, if you're a JetBlue and you can't get aircraft quick enough, what's the best way to do it? Is to merge with another airline that flies the same aircraft. And so is it with pilots as well.
If you're just joining us, talking to the Executive Director of the Mobile Airport Authority, Chris Curry, let's get some update on the international airport, you know, BFM, and kind of the timeline there. I know some things came out that had delayed, you know, what had been projected for the opening. Where are we now? Can you kind of lay it out for us?
Well, we're still in 2025. We've hired on the design team. They're working up through 30% design right now. We'll hire the construction management risk team within the next 2 weeks. And so we're still looking to open in 2025.
And that is with the, I mean, that's brick and mortar, the all the things you and I have talked about, the parking, the terminal, all that.
That's correct. It's terminal, parking garage, infrastructure expansion. You name it. But as you can tell, we're not waiting just for the new terminal to open. We're still busy trying to bring in other carriers that can use our low fare terminal.
What are what are the plans now as it stands with the footprint of Farmers, with the West Mobile Airport? What's going to be going on there post 2025 with who's flying in and out there? And also, with that, you know, substantial piece of land there that is defined by the airport now.
Well, we'll still own and operate it as an airport. We have the Coast Guard Aviation Unit that's there. We have Airbus Space and Defense there, and I expect a larger presence with corporate and general aviation use. We may reduce the size of the airport somewhat if there's an opportunity to release land that is not needed for aviation, and we'll take those profits and invest it in the downtown or the international airport. But it'll remain an airport under the ownership and management of the Mobile Airport Authority,
and
just without the commercial presence.
Okay, but and that would be—I mean—that would be 2025. It's still—it's on track. So when this shift happens to BFM, then that will be there won't be any more of that commercial going into to Farmers.
That's correct.
See, text coming in here, Bob saying that we need more direct flights to vacation destinations. I guess that's what this Avelo thing is all about. Orlando's defined as that. I guess, yeah, people are looking. I mean, you mentioned Denver. You know, that's my favorite. But obviously, you're thinking about that as well, not just business travel. You're thinking vacations.
That's what Avelo's profile is about. And Orlando is consistently one of the top five most requested leisure destinations in the United States. So what better place to start than Orlando? And again, once Orlando is successful, and if the market responds the way that I think they will, then we'll start to add more on with Avello.
Does Avello give you, like, ideas of what success is? Is it, you know, is it, obviously they would like to have every flight full, you know, to the brim, but is there, is that just their personal business, or they let you know what they would see as success?
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about what success looks like, and for them it's generally around 85% load capacity. So if you get an aircraft that carries 189 passengers and over a period of time that you're somewhere around 160-ish, then that's considered success.
Okay. You hear that? Mobile and Baldwin counties, we got our work cut out for us to make sure it sticks with us. Also, with the opening of the international airport, any other updates on, and I know this is maybe outside of your wheelhouse, but it has been discussed, of bringing different transportation together, right? Because I mean, I was just down at the Mobile Boat Show, the week before, and I saw Amtrak trains sitting on the tracks down there at the convention center. Any other discussion of maybe having the station for Amtrak be there at the airport, or is that still in the works?
Oh, yeah. Well, we've been on record for day one, looking at the international airport as a multimodal transportation system. And so in our master plan, there is a position for a substation for Amtrak. And as you know, we have, you know, FedEx serving us now. We had Amazon Air announce in November, bringing e-commerce into the airport. We're consistently looking at ways how to connect the port, the airport, and this entire transportation network, because, again, our geographical location with rail, with the highway system, with Mobile Bay, with the port, I mean, it gives us a competitive advantage like most communities don't have.
So many times we focus on the, you know, the stories about flying to Orlando or something like that, but you mentioned it, that Amazon Air thing, when that was announced. Even though it's not flying us to Orlando, that's a really big deal for our area, right? I mean, that's significant traffic through here.
Oh, economic development, jobs. And I'll tell you, as an Amazon user, I mean, I can order things today and have it delivered to me tomorrow because they can fly into this airport now. So I can see the advantage of us being a airport that has Amazon Air serving it.
This question here says, I've had it with low rate airlines coming in the past. It's been other airlines have lowered their price in order to push out the valued airlines. And so I guess, yeah, what is the competition of that? What is, like, you got a low price, airline comes in. What does that mean? Do you hear from the Deltas or Uniteds on that? Is it just different business models, or do they get upset? What happens with that?
Well, I think that's a thing of the past. I think the airlines now are too focused on survival rather than competing with each other. You know, the last time I knew that happened in the Southeast was with AirTran. And when AirTran wanted to serve Delta's hub in Atlanta, Delta fought them, lowered their prices, and drove AirTran out the market. Now these carriers are much more sensitive to what works for them and not necessarily head-to-head competition. So I would be very, very surprised to see another airline that would come into Mobile and want to serve Orlando. I think they're pretty respectful now because, you know, operating the way they did before almost ruined them as an industry.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't see too much of that anymore.
There we go. And we got to get you back on the show soon. Executive Director of the Mobile Airport Authority, our buddy Chris Curry, thanks for being on with us today.
Thanks, Sean.
All right, there he goes, Chris Curry. And it's always a treat. Guy knows more about airports. Like, he's forgotten more about airports than most of us will ever know. You just talk to him. I mean, you even get him, like, off the air and ask him questions like, why did this airline do this thing? He's like, okay, Sean, it's this, this, and this. It's pretty cool stuff. All right, coming back, got a bunch of texts to get to. And And we've got a story about President Biden and gun control. That and a whole lot more on the way.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 129 FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. You know the drill. I went late. That's fine. It's my show. I can go late if I want to. Oh, not always, but I did right there. So we'll go to the news, come back. Speaking of the news, said line out. Right now, Russian fighter jets bullied a U.S. drone before knocking it out of the sky. Here we go. You know, here we go. That's the fear so many of us have had. As two Russian Su-27 warplanes intercepted the U.S. Air Force spy drone before one of them clipped the aircraft's propeller just after 7 this morning, bringing it down in international waters. It says several times before the collision, the fighter jets dumped fuel on the MQ-9 drone and flew in front of it, doing unsafe maneuvers, according to the U.S. military. More details coming up in just a minute.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 136 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. We'll get to some of the breaking news now. Get a chance, we'll talk about what the president did with his executive action on guns. But first, this story, this is what scares the heck out of me. We talked about this the whole time. Why I'm pro-Ukraine defending their own sovereignty, but since the word go, I've been like, hey, let's talk about peace. Let's talk about not having a pitted war going on in Europe with players, you know, moving in from all sides. You know, well, I mean, where China is, they're trying to broker peace, they say. But Russia and then versus NATO. Okay, here's the situation. So this is from metro.uk. A Russian fighter jet has collided with a U.S. Reaper drone, causing it to crash into the Black Sea. Two Russian Su-27 warplanes intercepted the U.S. Air Force spy drone before one clipped the aircraft's propeller just after 7 a.m., bringing it down in international waters. Several times before the collision, the fighter jets, or the Russian fighter jets, dumped fuel onto the MQ-9 and then flew in front of it in unsafe maneuvers. Well, I mean, it's fighter planes. It's kind of what they do, right? They're not flying the Amazon cargo into Brooklyn. Quote here, this comes from U.S. military in a statement. It says, this incident follows a pattern of dangerous actions by Russian pilots while interacting with U.S. and allied aircraft over international airspace, including over the Black Sea, it continued. Continues here. These aggressive actions by Russian air crew are dangerous and could lead to miscalculation and unintended escalation. I don't know if it's unintended, though. I don't know if it, I don't. I think Tim earlier asked on the text line, if I thought this is what would bring us in. I don't think this action today, but this kind of action in general, Tim, worries the out of me. They go on in the story to say there was no immediate comment from Moscow, which has repeatedly voiced concern about U.S. intelligence flights close to the Crimean Peninsula, which it illegally annexed from Ukraine in 2014. The incident comes amid soaring tensions between Moscow and Washington over the Kremlin's war in Ukraine. Do we need that sentence? Do we need that? I guess if somebody's new to it, you know, just started reading news. White House National Security Spokesman John Kirby said Joe Biden has been briefed on the incident. Oh, good. Well, I feel better now. While there have been other such intercepts, Kirby said this one was unique in that it caused the downing of a U.S. aircraft. It is a U.S. aircraft. It's a drone, but it's a U.S. aircraft. I guess that's accurate. He added State Department will be speaking directly with their Russian counterparts and expressing our concerns over this unsafe and unprofessional intercept. NATO's top military commander said allies have also been briefed. U.S. Air Force General James Hecker, who oversees the U.S. Air Force in the region, said our MQ-9 aircraft was conducting routine operations in international airspace. It was intercepted and hit by a Russian aircraft, resulting in the crash and a complete loss of the MQ-9. It, in fact, is unsafe and unprofessional act by the Russians, nearly caused both aircraft to crash. Went on to say U.S. and allied aircraft will continue to operate in international airspace. We call on the Russians to conduct themselves professionally and safely. So there you go. So that's it's at the beginning of more of it. It's really not the beginning of it, though, because I don't have the stories in front of me, but there's been been issues already, right? In Alaska, they were close to U.S. airspace, still international, but they're, you know, somewhere out off the Aleutians that stretches about halfway to Russia anyway. The other worry I've talked about here, and I guess that's changed, right? Because this is this sliding conflict that, once again, still unpopular. I still think Ukraine has the right to defend themselves. But I worry daily about the rhetoric. I worry about, I don't hear enough calls for peace. Even Kissinger, remember Kissinger early on was saying, hey, we need to talk about maybe just let, you know, if the Ukrainians just let the Russians have Crimea and kind of, you know, some part of the Donbass and we sue for peace or something like that. You know, just at least talk about ideas for peace going forward. How long that peace lasts, I don't know, but it's better than the situation as it stands. I don't know what the right, but you have to sit down at the tables, right? I mean, before you can negotiate. But the worry for me was so many players in the region. So yeah, you get a story like this, international waters, Russian aircraft, one thing. You hear, remember how much talk that, I think it was, gosh, a couple months ago, or maybe more than that, that President Biden was talking about tanks, and, you know, we couldn't really put tanks into the hands of Ukrainians because that could lead to, you know, an increase in the war and proliferation of the war, World War III or something. Well, we did that. Then we, about a month and a half ago, sent those Abrams tanks. And it worried with me, too, with the rhetoric about taking the war to Moscow. I get it. If I was a Ukrainian, I get it. I'd want to take the war to Moscow, too. You've been killing my people. I want to ram it right down your throat, even though, again, I pointed out the green machine, the grinder of Russian military, and Russian military is famous for losing battles in the beginning of wars and conflicts. They lose, and then they just overcome with just the number of people they throw into the fight. But, you know, the Ukrainians, I get their spirit. I would, too. I mean, if somebody attacked my country, I'd want to beat them back to their borders and then take it the whole way to the house and shut them down. I get that spirit, but we can't be behind that. But we don't seem to be pushing back on it very much in rhetoric coming out of Washington. And if you have a situation, too, where, let's say, if I'm Ukrainian and I'm trying to get a unit move through and make some kind of flanking move into Russia, I'm going to use Poland, you know? I'm going to use the southeastern corner of Poland to try to do that. So what happens then? The Russians then will, you know, counterattack, and then you go have a missile goes into Poland, bing, Article 5 and World War III. It's an extremely dangerous game that's being played right now in that region. So I don't know where that goes, but I don't like it. Tim, I don't think this is the start of it, but I think it could be part and parcel to what could be. All right. So Don says, Sean, even though it's a drone, it's still powered by some human being at control station. Maybe they counter-offended and tried to outmaneuver those Russian fighter jets. Doubtful it would be successful, but if you're not going to get taken out, then why not take one out with you and blame it on them? I don't know. Marty says, why in the hell didn't they just shoot it down? I am willing to bet that the pilot that clipped the propeller off that drone did not intend to do that. That was a oh blank moment. It just worked out for the Russian pilot because he didn't crash his airplane. Yeah, I don't know how, and looking at that, the Russian jet, so the SU-27, yeah, how do you, I mean, I don't know, and I don't know how fast a Reaper drone flies. I know there's probably people in this, I know there's people in this audience that know how fast the Reaper drone can fly, but what kind of pitted speeds were the SU-27s and the Reaper going when you clip it? And then what's that effect on the Russian jet? That could have been, yeah, it could have brought them down as well. I don't like really any part of this at all. I mentioned this as we go a little further into this segment here, and we can come back to the Russian story because I know we're still getting texts about this. But President Biden signing an executive order to require background checks on more gun sales. I told you, I mean, when President Biden was elected and inaugurated, Do you remember the rhetoric? Remember we did whole shows on what the gun control rhetoric was and who he wanted to have over ATF and all that? And it got quiet for a while, but now it's back. This from Fox News says, President Biden expected to announce executive order today that would expand background checks to more firearm sales by expanding the statutory definition of a firearms dealer. Okay, and this is how you, you come at this, right? You've watched this on eroding of Second Amendment rights. There's never a, you never run like through the two hole. You never run the fullback through the two hole straight up the middle. You pick at it from the sides. That's how this is done. It says Biden is set to sign the order during a trip to Monterey Park, California, where he will meet with families and the community impacted by the mass shooting that killed 11 and injured 9 others in January. The White House said the executive order will bring the U.S., quote, as close to universal background checks as possible, end quote, without additional legislation. So what does that tell you, too? That there's not the, right, you can't get the additional legislation passed. Because those people that have to go face the voters back in the districts, those in the purple districts aren't going to do it. So it goes executive action. It says, under the executive order, Biden is also directing Attorney General Merrick Garland to develop and implement a plan to prevent former federally licensed firearm dealers whose licenses have been revoked or surrendered from continuing to engage in the business of dealing firearms. Okay, so let's look at the first word there. I don't think you're going to have an issue if somebody has had their license revoked, violating the job of people have FFLs. If you've had it revoked because you did something wrong, then that's fine. I think you'll have even fair-minded people that are advocates and strong advocates of the Second Amendment be like, okay, I mean, if you screwed up, what does that mean? Well, it says the order will also improve public awareness. All right, good. And increase the use of extreme protection like red flag laws and safe storage of firearms. Okay, now, okay, here's where we go, right? So you start off and say, this is why you have layers in these executive orders, and they'll have the part that the mainstream news will report tonight will be like, this order keeps people that have had their FFLs revoked from continuing to deal firearms. And I think most fair-minded people will go, well, good, if somebody's doing something illegal with them, then we don't want them doing it. But then you get in there, and in addition, the red flag laws, which I think there's a fair discussion. I don't think it goes on in our forum anymore, but there's a fair discussion about at an extreme level, looking at a red flag. But who decides that, right? It's subjective as well. But safe storage of firearms, and it's something that I really believe in, right? I mean, we encourage you to have your Mike Ward Liberty safe. Actually, talking to the Sheriff's Department, I think we're going to have a program coming this summer to make sure people like grandparents are taking care of kids in the summertime have cable locks to lock out guns. I'm for those things to encourage them in the community. But to have the federal government decide what the safe storage of firearms is? So back to the Fox News story. It says Biden is directing his cabinet to encourage the, quote, effective use, end quote, of those orders by partnering with law enforcement, healthcare providers, educators, and other community leaders. Please say stakeholders in here somewhere. That's another word we need stricken, done with the stakeholders, unless you're holding like a New York strip, which then you're my friend. Biden is also directing members of his cabinet to expand existing federal campaigns and efforts to promote the safe storage of firearms. The order will be also directed to the Secretary of Transportation. Oh, thank goodness Buttigieg is going to be in on this because he's been doing a stellar job on the other stuff. It says, in consultation with the Department of Justice to work to, quote, reduce the loss or theft of firearms during shipment, end quote, and to improve the reporting of such losses or thefts by engaging with carriers and shippers. White House said the order will also hold the gun industry accountable. Here we go. Here we go. This is what Hillary Clinton wanted so very much. This right here, this is the thing, right? I've told y'all 10 years. This is the thing. All this other stuff is nibbling around the edges, going after a bump stock or going after magazine capacity or all those kind of things. This is where they go. This is what shuts it down. The White House said the order will also hold the gun industry accountable by providing the public and policymakers with, quote, more information regarding federally licensed firearms dealers who are violating the law, end quote. The order directs the Attorney General to publicly release ATF records from the inspection of firearms dealers cited for violations of FFL. Okay. That's one part of it. And once again, if you violate the law, then you get punished. But the other part of this is this idea of being able to hold gun manufacturers liable when their gun is used in a crime. This is what Hillary Clinton pushed for. So many gun control. It's this idea to say, okay, Sullivan Arms, right? And so we make the SS 50, right? Sean Sullivan 50, 50 caliber, beautiful rifle. And some dirtbag uses it to commit crimes. Now, my company would be liable civilly for manufacturing that firearm. You do that, you won't have the gun manufacturers. They'll go out of business. So that's part of what's going on, as the president's decree out there today. It says here later in the story, it said senior administration official touted Biden's executive actions through his presidency related to reducing gun violence. The official said Biden will also continue to call on Congress to ban assault weapons and high-capacity magazines. The president earlier this month said he was going to ban assault weapons and high-capacity magazines come hell or high water. So there you go. So while he hasn't been playing this up as much lately, it's back, and there we go. Little update. Once again, do you think they have the support of the American people? Why wouldn't it have been done in the legislative branch? Yeah, because they don't have the support. Hence, executive orders. All right, be right back. 343-0106.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 155 FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. The segment of the show brought to you by my buddy Forrest at Blue Water Yacht Sales. So if you, and service, let me point out, if you've already been out in the boat this year, which I know a lot of us have, and you notice some things aren't working from maybe last year or sitting over the winter, it's time to get that work done now. Y'all, listen, Yamaha owners, it's even better with Blue Water Yacht Sales. They're a five-star Yamaha service facility with a certified master tech on staff, like right there at Blue Water Yacht Sales and Service, and they score 100% on the Yamaha Customer Service Index. With Blue Water Yacht Service, you'll get a full check of your boat, not just your engine. So this is what I love, too. They're going to check your pumps, your nav lights, your steering, your electronics, all the components that might cause you a problem now or maybe later this summer. And as always, they check warranty on anything needing work or parts, and not everybody does that. And additionally, Mercury folks, black engine owners, Blue Water is a certified Mercury service dealer too. So get on the water with confidence. They make it easy. Just call to schedule service, drop off your boat, get all the work done. So next time you back it down the ramp, you know everything's perfect and your family stays happy, which is good. Schedule it online at bluewateryachtsales.net or call today 476-2699 for Blue Water Yacht Sales and Service. Right to the text line here, the Ascension Technologies text line, and Ben, I like that. Ben says Sullivan Arms, which I just created there, Sullivan Arms, should make a 106.5 Creedmoor. the Creedmoor world. Then you could just ship it by train, and the Department of Transportation wouldn't care even if it derails. It's good stuff, Ben. Let's see. Don says, in other words, they're tracking who's buying and what they're buying and where it's going. And next thing you know, it'll be the same as owning a suppressor. If you own an AR-style rifle, they can come and inspect your store, the firearm. Well, now that's scary. Let's see. Unnamed texture, kind of like they're holding Big Pharma responsible for the deadly China virus killing Americans. You know, it would be different in this case. Well, I'm the biggest thing, if you're a Second Amendment advocate, this is the way that move to hold gun manufacturers responsible to me out of all the things that happen and all the things I get on here and get on my soapbox, bop, bop, bop. You know, I mean, I was like the only person in the country that was pointing out that it was unconstitutional to ban bump stocks. I mean, even then President Trump was for it. I mean, the NRA was for it. I said, it's a piece of polycarbonate. It doesn't actually change the mechanism of the firearm, but nobody was listening except the court. This move to have civil liability on gun manufacturers, I don't think they can get this through, but if they did, that would be the knockout punch to our Second Amendment rights. Just keep your eye on that ball. Keep your eye on that ball. Don't say it's happening. I don't think it's happening tomorrow, but they keep pushing that one. So but watch for it. All right. Paul Feinbaum Show on the way next. I'll talk to y'all tomorrow. Have a great one.